Tonight is the 60-second litmus test to positively know what is part of your calling. And during the call tonight, you're going to learn how to test any activity that you do and know whether it's worth continuing to pursue or if you can just drop it and move on to other stuff. And the other thing, the big thing we want to do tonight is I'm going to teach you how to start building a personal knowledge base that will help you find new connections and new opportunities as you continue to try out these little fun sides we talked about last week. So let's see. So we'll do introductions in just a minute. One thing I just wanted to go back and say, we're going to talk tonight more about these experiments and tonight we're really going to talk about what are the parts of experiment that allow you to get the most out of it. But what we're going to be working towards is, right now we're using a lot of our intuition and kind of our creativity and the kind of right sides of our brain. And we are going to get back to more kind of analytical stuff. But it's really important that for this part we focus on how do we tap into that part of us that can like instinctively tell where we're going to go. So forever we won't be just trying stuff and wandering around, although that's a part of how you learn about yourself. But we are going to get back to how do you make that more tangible and concrete and something you can talk about. So I just wanted to share that in the beginning. So let me start with a question to you all. So I want you to think about how you choose to go see a movie when you decide you want to go see one. So what's the process you use to decide what to go see? Does anybody want to share? There's not a right or wrong answer.
Okay, I'll bite. This is Lauren, and
yep.
I look at, what's the buzz going on? What have I heard about? I don't see a lot of movies, so I want to make sure I go see something I'm really going to like.
Okay.
Who's starring in it? Whether, what the genre, is it a comedy? Is it a drama? What am I in the mood for? That kind of thing.
Okay,
and
that's good.
Theater it's in too, because some theaters have nicer seats than others.
Okay, good. That's a good one. How about anybody else? Anybody else have anything different or more they do? So have you ever been disappointed in a movie?
Sure.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, and sometimes I'm like you. There are certain reviewers that I generally trust, but sometimes you'll still go and it won't be as good as you thought, and then sometimes it's pleasantly surprising too. And so, so what we're gonna with these experiments tonight is it's kind of akin to that process of deciding to look at a movie. It's like you have some knowledge and some ways you go about doing it, but ultimately you go see the movie, and then the movie is something you like or you don't like, and then maybe you decide not to trust that reviewer or that friend maybe as much, or vice versa. So that keep that in mind as we go through, and I'll come back to that later on. So we had a couple more people join. Who? I think Thelma, I heard you come in.
Yes.
Okay, and who else just joined?
Hey, it's Rachel.
Hey, Rachel. Great.
Alan, I probably will need to come buzz out. So.
Okay, that's fine. So, okay, well, so tonight you're going to learn how to decide, what activities to pursue for work and for fun. And in particular, we're going to talk about how you can develop a super fast, super reliable way to determine and decide what things that you can keep on the someday list that we talked about last week for these fun-sized experiments, and what things you can just blow off from now on. And then once you get the hang of this approach, you'll be able to do a quick version that I call the 60-second litmus test to know if something is something you need to pursue. So we're going to cover a lot of ground tonight. We have six topics we're going to go over, and they are, we talked about, they're in the outline in the email. So, and thanks for the feedback on the outline. And actually, this is the first time we've used the outline, and that came from feedback from Stephanie, who was on the call. But if you think of other things like that would make this work better for you, just let me know, and I'm happy to start incorporating them in. It's very helpful for me, too. So let's go over what we're going to cover tonight. So first, we're going to go over a little background on the difference between a goal focus and a process focus, and you'll learn why your play muscles are probably a little flabby. And then second, we're going to go over, we're going to talk, take you back to, let's see, second, we're going to talk about what you how do you measure what you like and don't like, and why do you need to measure it at all anyway? And then we're going to go back in the third section to middle school or elementary school and talk about the scientific method, but I will not give you a pop quiz on that now or at the end. It won't be real scientific, but it's a good analogy. And then fourth, we're going to talk about how to actually run a fun size experiment using this method. And then I'll give you an example. I actually took my example from last week and did it today, so I got a fresh example I can walk you through. Then we'll talk about the FAST version, which is a 60-second litmus test. And then I want to talk about something that's kind of analogous to that someday list we started last week, which is a really personal knowledge base. So we'll talk about that last. And that's going to be important as you go forward and start to make connections between all these different experiments you're doing. So, and my goal for you is that by the end of tonight, you'll be able to take one of the items on your someday list, plan out a fun-sized experiment that will give you a clear understanding of what to do next after you've done it. So, and the idea is that you'll always have another thing to try, and you'll always be able to keep really refining your knowledge of what it is about you that's unique and how you can apply that in the world. And that'll get back to, we'll get back later on to how you apply it to work. I'll touch on the someday list experiments, what I mean by that, for the people who weren't here last week. They're also in the notes that I sent out from last week, and if you didn't get those, I can send those to you. So just send me an email, or we can talk about it at the end. Okay, just a few logistics before we start. So as always, this is meant to be an interactive session, so please jump in and ask questions. And as you know, I will call people out if you don't. So and then feel free to make comments at any time. I am recording this, so just use your first name, and please introduce yourself whenever you make a comment so we'll start to learn people's voices. If you need to mute yourself, you can use *6, and then to unmute, just press *6 again. And then I'll be putting the recording up on my website, and I'll send you a link with a summary probably tomorrow so that you can listen to it again if you miss anything, so you don't really have to take notes if you don't want to. All right, so but I know a couple more people joined in, so let's go around and if everybody could just share your first name. And then tonight, tell us one thing that gets in the way of you living a great life by whatever definition of great life you have. So, Lauren, why don't you go first?
I'm Lauren. I'm in Oregon, and it rains a lot in Oregon. And so that gets in the way of me, you know, just being outside doing things in the sun, which I would enjoy a bit more.
Who wants to go next? Anybody jump in?
I'll go. This is Melissa here in Charlotte. And I would say that the one thing that gets in my way is me.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe a lack of confidence.
Okay. Lack of confidence in what? Do you know?
I think a lack of confidence that it's okay to fail.
Okay, that's good.
Perfectionism is another not as nice word as lack of confidence.
Okay. I can understand that. Regina.
Well, I guess I'm kind of living the dream. So, you know, I went ahead and stepped out about 5 years ago, but now it's becoming you know, separation of dream and true reality, and what, you know, what really are, now that I've lived on both sides of the fence, what, you know, what is fallacy and what's not when it comes to being on your own.
Okay, running your own business, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so some of the challenges of running of your own business.
Right, the things that nobody tells you.
Yeah, right, okay, that's good. Okay, that's good. Elizabeth.
Hi. I'm kind of a little out of it today because I actually just lost my job today. So.
Oh my gosh.
So, what gets in my way? I guess I just don't really know exactly what I want to do because I have a lot of different interests and such. And if I just knew what I should do, because I would like to have my own business, just to be able to do it.
Okay. Let's see. Who else is on? Anybody else can jump in?
I'll follow that. This is Thelma, and okay. I, the
making a commitment on one direction, having many interests.
Okay. Rachel.
I just got back on the call, Alan, so...
Okay. So tell us about where you are and what gets in the way of you living a great life by whatever your definition for great life is.
You caught me off guard because I just walked back into the call. Ask the question again?
Sure, yeah. So what gets in the way of you living a great life by whatever your definition is for a great life?
Oh, okay. My brain gets in the way of me.
How so?
I think I can talk myself out of things. Like, I'll get scared.
Okay.
And I'll just, like, not take kind of a risk, or I'll, like, sit on the couch instead of, you know, stepping out and trying something new. So it's definitely my brain.
Okay. All right. Did somebody else call in? Do we have anybody else? Okay, that must have been Rachel calling out.
Yeah,
okay.
That might be coming back.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks for sharing that, y'all. And I think there's some things we're going to do that can help with hopefully the confidence, and maybe also help Regina with you thinking about work, how work is, to give you some more room to enjoy yourself and do what you want to do. So, all right. So let's see. Right. Okay. So let's get started. We'll talk about the first thing we're going to talk about is why do you need a litmus test anyway? I mean, it seems, at one hand, it seems kind of silly that we would need to do something like this. I mean, can't we just tell what we like? That seems kind of silly. But at the same time, you know, obviously we aren't very good at doing that if you judge by just how many people are unhappy or confused or we don't know what we want to do. That's really common. So there must be a reason. So I wanted to start off by talking a little bit about a couple of things that get in our way that you may not be aware of, or you may haven't thought that way about. I think this will give you some perspective on why it's really hard to figure out for yourself just by thinking what it is you ought to do with your life or how to make a decision on that. And so these are things we're going to have to deal with and accept and work around. And there's a couple of things that I want to talk about. The first is that we are really rewarded in modern Western culture for focusing on goals instead of and really ignoring the journey. And it even starts in school. I mean, would you guys think back to elementary school for a minute? Think back to when you were in grade school. And so what were your favorite things in elementary school, if you can remember? What were your favorite parts of it?
P.E.
Yeah? Yeah, me too. Talking with my friends. That was one of mine. Yeah, so the other day I was watching a home movie with my daughter, and I think I started doing this thing at Christmas where I every year I ask them what they want to be when they grow up, because I want them to remember that when they're older, what they said when they were little. And that's just one day. That's the one day I filmed them, so I do it then. And one year I asked one of my daughters what she liked about school, and she said, you know, PE, recess, and lunch. And it really strikes me that she's really got the traditional work culture figured out already. Is that you know you're compelled to go, you wait for your vacations, and you look forward to that, and you have fun at recess and lunch. And we just get trained to focus on the goals of work, what we need to, what is our production, or what are we going to output, you know, what are we going to get done for our jobs, and often at the expense of our day-to-day enjoyment of what we're doing, or even of us thinking much about what's going on in our lives and are we enjoying it. That's almost secondary. We're really focused on just what do we have to get done this week. So so I used to travel a lot in my last job to a lot of cool places. I went to Tokyo and London and Paris and Hong Kong and Helsinki, and I did that all in one year, believe it or not. And it sounded really cool to my friends. And one time I got back after one of those long trips, and that same daughter asked what I did when I was traveling for work. And I told her that, well, you know, I would get up and I would go somewhere and we'd be in a conference room most of the day and we'd sit around and talk about business. And then I usually went out to dinner with people that I didn't particularly like, but I had to be nice to them because they were associates. And then I would get in a car or a train or a plane and go to the next place and do the next same thing the next day. And she immediately said, wow, man, that's worse than school. So, I mean, and I'm sure that you guys have had that sense too, that when you do have time to slow down, like at Christmas or on a summer vacation, I mean, those are the times we start to think about what more we could do with our life. I mean, can you guys relate to that kind of sense?
Yeah.
Do you guys agree with that sense, or do you think that's wrong about focusing on the end?
No, you're spot on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I realized that even when I got, even when work was good, you know, when it was exciting and, you know, I'd get a big win at work, something would get done that I was trying to do for a long time, that the enjoyment was kind of already over almost by the time it happened. You know, I was already thinking about what I had to do next. And, you know, work certainly doesn't care so much about that. They're asking you, how are you going to do that again or whatever. So there's just no time to celebrate. And so really, I didn't get much enjoyment from the goals either. So there really wasn't much there at all as far as personal rewards, if I step back and think about it. So the point of all that point is that we're not really rewarded for paying attention to how we feel about the steps along the way. We're rewarded for the end results. You know, in school, it's grades or tests or those sorts of things, or going on to the next, you know, middle school, the high school, the college, that sort of thing. And in work, it's whatever the steps are, however we get graded, because other people want us to do things for them, not for ourselves. And so what tends to happen, I think, as we go from being a kid to being an adult, is that we kind of learn to how to sort of squash our feelings and find ways to focus or to just tricks to get through it all and try to ignore whatever unpleasant things that we have to do along the way. You know, even though my daughter now, she understands, she appreciates her lunch and her recess and her time with her friends, but by the time she grows up, she'll learn how to, you know, not think so much about that because you have to work all the time or whatever. So I think that's a reality that tends to make us lose a sense that we're born with and that we have a lot when we're little kids about what's just fun to us. It's hard a lot of times when you ask adults, what do you do for fun? I mean, I hate getting asked that question. You know, a few years ago, I'm like, I don't know, I travel, read, you know. So that happens. So that's one thing we deal with. Now, the second reason that we struggle is can be understood by looking at, there was a study done on speed dating. And do you guys, has anybody ever done speed dating on this call? Somebody says
if
something.
We have, we wouldn't admit it, would we?
No, I was going to say, right. You know, even though I'm married, actually today is my 20th anniversary. I would love to try that. I think it would be fun just to see what it would be like, you know. But you guys know what it is. It's basically, they get a group of people together, maybe 20 or 100 people, and they kind of pair them up, and you spend like 5 minutes with 8 different people. And if you if both the woman and the man put down that they liked each other, then they'll get connected for another date later on.
They should do speed dating for, like, friends.
Right, exactly. Know, like, I think that – wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah, or just to meet friends. New people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that,
your
is
business
that Melissa?
Idea.
Is that Melissa?
Yeah, just for speed dating for social contacts. That's cool.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to do that. We'll start a meetup. I'm writing that down. I would love that. Okay. Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay. So you're going to get me off track. Okay, so there are two researchers in New York who run these events. They're psychologists, and they run these events and do them a little bit different way. And they did this to study how accurate people are at explaining why they make choices that they do. They wanted to see how well people could predict kind of the characteristics of the person that they would pick, the type of people they would pick. And this was described in a great book called Blink that was written by Malcolm Gladwell. And so the difference between these events and the standard speed dating is that the participants don't just date and then just check a yes or a no. They do actually they ask them to fill out things at 4 different times. So before the speed dating starts, at the end of the evening, and then 1 month later, and then 6 months later. And what they do is they fill out a short questionnaire that asks them to rate what they're looking for in a potential partner on a scale of 1 to 10. And so the categories were attractiveness, shared interests, sense of humor, sincerity, intelligence, and ambition. And at the end, in addition, at the end of every little speed date they had, they rated the person they just met based on the same categories. And so what they wanted to find out was that, you know, you might think that, okay, I know I like, you know, women who are funny and smart and have ambition. And so the people that I'm just drawn to and want to date are going to have those characteristics. That's what you would think. But what they found out was that that's not what happened and that people don't do a very good job of predicting. And so not only are they bad at predicting who they might pick, but what also that they saw happening was that after they pick somebody, they would change what they say they're looking for in a person to make it match that person that they met. So not only are we not good at picking it, but we kind of fool ourselves. Not fool ourselves, but we kind of are always refining what our criteria are for looking at somebody. And what happens is we do have this image in our head, you know, I like ambitious, funny people, but it's just not complete. It's not nuanced enough for all the different factors that we have in our head that go through our mind in a split second when we meet somebody new. And so Malcolm Gladwell's book was really about that the strength of our intuition in making quick decisions and how that speed forces us to use a different part of our brain that is much more intuitive and able to make connections between a lot of different factors very quickly, and so we don't kind of overthink things. And so, but he talks about, he uses an analogy that I liked, and he said that the problem is that, you know, we have this logical brain that where we're writing down these characteristics we like, ambition, funny, and then we have this other side of us that's able to make way more complicated decisions really quickly, but it's kind of behind this locked door of our unconscious because it's not conscious. We can't see that. It only happens through a feeling or a sense or something that we do very quickly. So I think what happens to us is, you know, we've neglected that part of ourselves while we've been growing up and focusing on goals and things. I mean, we certainly use that in our work, and that comes into play. But in terms of intuiting what we are like to do or what's a good fit for us or what really pulls us, we've kind of let those, what I call them, the fun muscles, we let them get flabby over our adult life. So we need to build those back up. And then on top of that, if we try to be really analytical about what we might like to do, like make a list of the jobs I've liked and make a list of the type situations I'm in, and then try to take that and go forward to a type of job, you know, this research shows that we're really bad at making predictions based on things like that, and that we're much better when we just are in a situation and we can sense yes or no, that was a good fit for me. So it's no wonder that the traditional kind of planning ways don't work for us of setting out a goal we want to go to and then putting things in place. Those don't work really well to help us understand what the meaningful work is inside of us. So what we really need is a way to get behind that Malcolm Gladwell's locked door and find a way to tap into our intuition. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight and the rest of the class is how do we tap into that intuition, but then take it back and turn it into something that our logical selves can use to do more things. So does everybody follow me on that part of it? That was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about how we can measure what we like and don't like. This is the second item on our outline for the day. So how do we get behind these closed doors, so to speak? Well, the good news is that you're already pretty good at this. I mean, you know, the speed daters, their accuracy of picking people they like was actually pretty good, based on a short amount of time. So it wasn't that they were picking the wrong people. It was just that they didn't understand very well what went into that decision that they had. And then think about, like, I mean, you can think about a time when you start working in a new place and you meet people. I mean, I think we're all pretty good at getting a sense relatively quickly if we're going to click with somebody or not. Or think about, you know, picking a restaurant. Where do you want to go to eat today. You know, I would say probably we're pretty accurate in saying that, you know, if I go to this Mexican restaurant at this time of day, that I'm going to probably like that based on the knowledge that I have. And I didn't have to think really hard to do that. So you already have these skills. We just have to, there's a couple more pieces that you need to add to that to help to start to build it out, because obviously figuring out what your purpose and your calling in life is a lot more complicated and has a lot more to it than picking a restaurant out does. So, all right. I want to come back to that, the analogy of the movies before. If you think about what kind of movies you like, I mean, somebody tell me a type of movie they liked. Anybody?
Psychological thriller.
Psychological thrillers. Okay, that's great. And then, if a new movie comes out and it's a psychological thriller, it's probably going to get your attention. And then, you know, what else might go into whether you go see that or not?
Who wrote it?
Okay. And so those are things that are kind of based on, like we talked about at the beginning, those are things that are based on your experience. You had a good experience with that before. And it's I like political thrillers, kind of like those too. And my wife likes English historical romances. And there have been times when we'll go to the movies and split up and go see different movies. And one of the reasons I like them, and one of the things I notice is that if I go to one of those kind of movies with Kitty, so like I might be looking at my watch halfway through just to see how much time we have left because it's just dragging on and I'm bored or whatever. But if I were in my movie, you know, I might be looking at my watch hoping that there's more time because it's really good and time's flying by. So can you guys relate to that experience? Maybe the different types of movies, but.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a simple example of that sense of a sense of flow. It's like of time flying by. And so so when we want to measure, this is about how to measure whether something we're doing is good for us, that flow is one great way to do that. And so I talked about before, so we want to use our instinct. You know, we've picked things that we're interested in to try, that we want to go experiment with. If we want to look for things that make the time just fly by, you know, you can't believe it, oh my gosh, it's already time to go, or this is going fun. And then the last piece is that you want to see if you are kind of more energetic afterwards. For a good example of that is one of my other daughters started taking horse riding lessons this year, and she'd never done it before. And she went to a camp last summer, and she's pretty reserved and doesn't talk much. But whenever she goes and rides a horse, you know, which is at 5 o'clock on a Monday after she's been in school all day long, she is just a chatterbox when she comes out of that because she's just so excited from doing this. And every week it's like that, you know, and she just loves it. And so it's clear that there's something about that experience that makes Kate really, really gives her back some of her energy. So those are really the gauges. Those are the things we're going to use to say, okay, this is something that, well, that's how we're going to test out these experiments that we do with things. So the last piece we need to know how to measure something. So we've got this interest, we got a sense of flow when we're doing it, and afterwards we're energetic or excited and we want to talk about this thing that we did. So the other piece to add is a what I call a fun scale, and Barbara shares something like this too. But and this is something that is purely based on your instinct, and it's just a rating scale of 1 to 10. And what you want to do is to say if one is surgery without anesthesia, right, like in the Civil War with a stick in your mouth, and then 10 is complete ecstasy, you know, just rate how fun something was on that scale. You know, was it 5? It was average. Was it, it was better than average, but it wasn't that great. It's 7 or whatever. Just what are you just on your internal scale, not based on anything other than how you felt about something. So that's going to be the metric that we use on these experiments. So it's really that simple. You know, the important parts, so you've got just the interest, the flow, the energy, and then we're going to rate these things on a scale. So that's how we're going to measure it, and that's really all it takes. But the important, so that's the measurement. Now, the really important parts in how we're going to get some value out of doing these little experiments is what comes before and after we did the measurement. So now we're going to move on, and I'm going to talk about the scientific method a little bit. Okay, so I guess this is a little bit of a quiz. So does anybody remember what the scientific method is, or can explain it? I won't make fun of you.
It sounds familiar. It's been too long, man.
The method of testing, identifying a hypothesis for why something is the way it is, and then developing a test to see if that hypothesis is right or wrong.
Ah, perfect. That's a great answer. You're exactly right.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's right. But basically, it's not really that complicated. Basically, when you do the basis of all science is that basically you have a question that you want to answer. And so, you know, do rocks fall when you drop them out of your hand? And then you have a hypothesis, and you think, you know, I think that, yes, the rock is going to fall when it comes out of my hand. And then you do an experiment. You hold the rock up. You let it go. And then you say, did it fall like I thought, yes or no? And then if it didn't do what you thought, then you go back and revise what your guess was, your hypothesis was. So that's basically the scientific method. And so the big parts that we needed to add to our test, which to our little those little criteria I was just talking about, that's going to be the test to know whether or not something is something that you should pursue further, whether it's something that's important to you, that's a good fit for you, you know, whether it's part of your call. Those are the questions that we're trying to answer. We're trying to see, is this something that I should pursue or can I drop it? So that's the question. So the two parts that are really, really important, and this is like the most important thing of the whole class today, is you need to write down, before you do something, what do you think is going to happen? You need to predict. So I'll tell you about my experiment in a minute, but say I want to go and learn how to drive a race car, and I'm going to try that out. And so I think, you know, before I go, I think I'm going to love the speed of going fast. I think I'm going to love the kind of challenge of having to learn how to maneuver around a race course. And, you know, I think it's going to be fun to meet the people who work on cars with their hands or something. So, but it's really important that you write that stuff down, because remember in that test that people did at the speed dating is you tend to change what you think you thought you were going to like to make yourself right afterwards. That's a natural thing that happens. So if you don't write it down ahead of time, you don't really know what you learned in the process. So basically you write down what do you think is going to happen. Then you go out and you do it. And then when you get done, you go, okay, did I, was it what I thought? First of all, you know, how would I rate it? Is it a 2 or is it a 9? You know? And I think anything below a 7, you can blow off. And anything above a 7, you should keep in some form or fashion on your someday list. So did it agree? And then you could break it down. So like you might go, man, I really liked how hard it was to drive that car. It was harder than I thought, and that was really fun for me, that challenge, but the speed like really scared me, and I don't want to do that anymore. So, but there was a part of it that was fun for me to do. And so it doesn't have to be that the whole thing was great or bad. Maybe parts of it were. So you have sort of a new hypothesis. Well, you might want to drive cars, but maybe I want to do more like a rally kind of race or something, or go-karts where I don't have to go so fast, but I can still do the maneuvering. And then you might try that next time, keeping with that example. So does everybody follow that logic? Does anybody not follow that?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. So and again, the main thing is you want to write down what you think is going to happen, and then after you get done, you need to think about it, and you need to write that down too. Did it really happen? Okay, those are the two key pieces. And it's going to be important that you do that, because documenting that stuff as you try more things, that's how we're going to get more logical later on, and we're going to be able to look at these things and draw some conclusions and try and find some new things to try that we might not have thought of all on their own. So we'll talk about that later. So okay, I'm going to skip that. I think I beat that to death. Okay, so let's talk about how to run an experiment. And so let me just recap from last week. Last week I talked about fun size experiments, and what the word fun size comes from those little Halloween candies that you get. The small size sticker bars in the big bag you give at Halloween are actually called fun size. And my daughter thinks that's hilarious because there's nothing fun about a little tiny candy bar. But for us, that I use that word because we had these big ideas we talked about the first week of like a dream job we might want to do or something we've always wanted to try. And we needed to have a way that we could actually do them now instead of having to have lots of money or lots of time to go off and like travel the world. So we want to take that and turn it into something that we can do for free with not much time and really soon so we can know whether it's fun or not. So that's a fun size experiment. And we're doing them so that we can check things off our list quicker so we can try more things and start to understand better what we want to do and that we and make better choices about the kind of work that we do. All right, so let me share what I did today on this. So I don't know if you guys remember. So last week, the first week we had made a list of 10 things we were interested in. And the one I picked was work with a professional photographer. And last week we kind of broke that down into a fun size. And what I realized was what I wanted to do was really learn how a professional photographer works with his subjects and what's that dynamic like, and then how do they – less the technical side than more the interacting with the people side. So so as I thought about how can I go and do that, I remembered a couple of things that I'd seen before. One was a blog that's done by a guy in New York, and he takes pictures of people on the street who are dressed well in, by his definition of that. And he calls this website the Sartorialist. And so I like his style of taking pictures, and I like the fact that he kind of visually picks people out, and they're strangers. And so he goes up and meets them, and he takes a picture of them. So I had that in my mind. And then the other piece I had was a little video I'd seen of this guy named Albert Mazelis, who's a director. He made the Rolling Stones movie, Give Me Shelter, a long time ago. And he makes documentary pictures. Well, I'd seen a picture of him. He lived in New York, and he was just in the street, and he would just go up to people and start a conversation with them and get to know them a little bit. And then he would take some portraits of them in real time to do that. So I kind of wanted to try that approach out. It's something I've thought about for a long time. Could I just go, you know, randomly meet people and then can I take as good a pictures of those people as I do when I do something with somebody I know? So that was kind of my question. So I put those two things together and I said, okay, I'm going to go to a mall and I'm going to dress well and I'm going to go take pictures of them. So I had my question is, you know, is this something I'm going to enjoy doing, you know, as much as I do my other photography? And I said, I wrote down what I thought I would like. I thought I would like getting the people to open up a little bit to me. And then I thought that I would like capturing a photo that really showed their expressions and what they're like. And that's based on, you know, other photography I've done and what I thought I would like. Okay, so today at about 12:30, I got in my car, I went over to the mall, and I gave myself just like 45 minutes to do this. So my thinking was this is something that I could do on my lunch break. So I was going to have lunch, take these pictures, and then come home all within an hour or so. So I drove over to the mall, parked my car. I go up, and I'm sitting in the food court. And so then I start And the interesting thing was that we talked about resistance before a little bit last week, and that's the whenever we start to do things that are really important to us or that close to things that are important to us, one of the things that will happen is there's a little voice in our head that worries about us that will tell us, you know, don't do that. Kind of like, you know, Rachel, you talked about talking yourself out of things and that sort of thing. And so one of the things that was really interesting thing is, okay, I'm going to do this experiment. I'm going to the mall. And as I go up the escalator into the mall, I'm like thinking, you know, oh, man, I'm really kind of nervous about doing this. You know, what if the people won't talk to me or how am I going to go talk to somebody? And even though I've done stuff before, I still, you know, this was important and I was doing this experiment and all those kind of things. I really did sense that resistance. So I just wanted to share that to know that that's going to be there whenever you do any of this stuff. So it's just something to be aware of. We can talk more about that later if you want to. So I'm feeling that. I go up the escalator. I get my Chick-fil-A sandwich, and I sit down, and I'm eating. What I noticed was, because I was there to take pictures, I'm kind of looking around at people, and I'm really looking at people with a different sort of eye. I'm looking to see who do I think would be interesting to take a picture of, and who's visually appealing for a photograph or whatever. And one of the things I realized from that was I'd forgotten how much fun it was for me when I go to new places, just to look at people. I'll look at them and I'll try to figure out what their story is. You know, I'll just judge them by their expression or how they're dressed or who they're with. I'll make up some story about what their history is. So that was something that I kind of noted as something else maybe I want to try more of later on. So that was one thing that happened. So I picked out my first subject. There was a guy, and he was probably about my age, and he was wearing but he had like a soccer uniform on and shoes, and that was kind of interesting. So, and he was sitting with a little kid. And he looked like somebody that I could approach who wouldn't blow me off. So I went and talked to him, and I told him what I was doing. I said, I'm teaching this class, I'm doing this experiment, and it would be okay to take a picture of you and your son. And he said yes. So we sat down while he finished his lunch, and we talked for about 5 minutes. And then I took the picture with him and his kid. And so that was one, and I want to do a couple of more. So then I'm walking around, and I talked to I went up to another guy, and he was like, no, thank you. And so then I got kind of rejected a little bit, but I walked around, I did a few more things, and then I tried to take a picture of a security guard, and then she told me I can't take pictures in the mall. And so that, by that time, it was time for me to leave. So that was my experiment right there.
You're a brave man.
Well, you just say that, but and I guess that's a good point. You know, for me, going up and talking to strangers is something I actually enjoy doing. So that's a scary thing for most people, and I know that. So you have to calibrate in that I actually like doing that. So I wouldn't – there are other things that y'all would probably like to do that I would be terrified to do. So so I had picked things that I thought I would like. You know, I like just meeting people. I like photographing people, you know, and I like to take photographs. I like all those things. So why don't I put a gun to do it? And so – but what? So when I sat down and thought about it and started rating them, here's how I kind of broke it out. So I talked about how I enjoyed looking around for people, and I remembered how much I like people watching and kind of guessing about what people do. And so, you know, I liked that part of it, and it was okay. I would give that about a 6 out of 10. So it was enjoyable, but it wasn't like super great. Now the father and son that I met, I had a great talk with him. He's a soccer player in college. I know tons about him now. He went to West Virginia. He grew up in D.C. His son's name is Ethan. He's 8 years old. He's going to fourth grade. The dad teaches high school. And on and on. I know a bunch more about him. So, you know, that part I love because I was meeting somebody and getting to know them a little bit, and all that happened real quick. But that's something that I already know that I'm good at. So I'd give that an 8. That was fun. And if I'd been in a situation where it wasn't kind of forced, like I was asking him to take his picture, I think it would have maybe even been a 9 or something. So that part was really good. That's something I should keep. But then, taking the photo of them after I did all that, it wasn't that fun. I realized that was probably about a 4. So I don't necessarily want to do that. It wasn't the same as I feel when I'm taking a picture of somebody that I know where I have a lot of time and I can really take a lot of pictures and kind of capture their what they look like. And then approaching people to ask them was really like anti-fun. So I give that a 2. And so I need to know that any great ideas I have that involve going up to strangers and asking them to do stuff, I just need to take that off my list because that kind of interaction, for whatever reason, isn't comfortable to me. So that was me running through the whole thing. And going in, I thought that I would like meeting the people, which I did and I didn't. I did like getting to know them, but I didn't like that kind of interaction with them. Getting them to open up a bit. I liked it with the people I met, but it didn't work with the other ones. And then capturing a photo of their expressions didn't work out for me. So, you know, even though I've done a lot to kind of understand myself, I actually got some new insights today because Melissa knows this. This is an idea I've had about going downtown and taking pictures of random people for a long time. And now I'm thinking I probably don't want to do that unless I think of some way to do it where they're not complete strangers or where they're there wanting me to take their picture or something. So I can get rid of that idea from my someday list, and I'll take that off, and then I'll start thinking about a different way to do it maybe.
You should put an ad in the paper.
Right, yeah, exactly. Or something like that, like do some marketing to pull them in instead
right.
of doing the other, right?
Forfeit.
So Melissa, I know you and Elizabeth, you guys had something last week. Do you guys want to talk about your experience? I mean, I hadn't talked about how to grade them yet, but do you want to think about that in this light? Maybe share that.
This is Elizabeth. For last week, I was interested in getting into like three-dimensional, like modeling animation type software. And
right.
What exactly did you want me to say, Alan?
Oh, so like if you can kind of now that I've talked about this way of kind mm-hmm. of thinking about an experiment, think back to whatever you tried and how would you rate it based on a 10-point scale?
I downloaded some free like kind of modeling animation software. It was like Google SketchUp, and I really liked it a lot. So I started actually doing more research on different kinds of 3D programs, and on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably scored about a 9.
Okay.
So
that's
really
great.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, so it was like everything you thought it would be when you
Oh yeah, I was even more excited after I did it.
Okay,
I
great.
Stayed up all night, not all night, but like till midnight, like playing around with it and stuff. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Melissa, how about your experiment?
Yeah, so my experiment was I had this big kind of ambitious project, writing project that I thought I wanted to do. And I sort of realized that it was really big and so that I was overwhelmed. So the experiment that I tried was like, okay, well, do the fun, this is Alan's advice, do the fun thing first, which for me I thought, okay, well, I think it would be really fun to go research this recycling and specifically plastic recycling. So I spent an hour or so just Googling, you know, recycling plastics. And I thought the thing that I would like about it is the research and sort of getting at the, getting through the hype to some kind of truth. And I did that, and I did like that part. I mean, I realized, but really just validated for me that there was a lot of, hype, that it was really actually pretty difficult to get to data about recycling and plastics and like an end-to-end from production to trash. Actually, that was going to be more difficult than I had anticipated. So I would say, like on a scale from 1 to 10, the interesting thing, I would say it was probably about a 7, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And so you could break it down into that, maybe that the research and the science parts are different. Maybe that's two parts of what you ran into that you didn't anticipate before.
Yeah, and then
the research was fun and the other one wasn't so fun or something.
Yeah, and then the communication part too is like, well, so what did I learn? You know, and sort of getting that onto paper or at least like, you know, telling people about it. I really enjoyed that part too.
Okay, yeah, cool. Great. So I think it's really – so you guys kind of had – so I had an overall less than average experience. Melissa, you had like a 7 overall, and then Elizabeth had a 9, you know. But all those experiments are equally valuable to us because even my one where it wasn't like I thought helps me because I can let go of some stuff that I'd had on my list that I wanted to try. And at some level, I'm sure I was kind of beating myself up for why am I – not going ahead and doing this. And I think it's important to realize that sometimes we don't do stuff because there's a good reason that we don't want to do it. Because like, I guess, you know, my subconscious knew that I really wouldn't want to go up to people I don't know and ask them to do something for me, you know, without a relationship with them or whatever. And I think that's what I got reinforced today. And so the good news is now I can say, you know, I don't have to question that. I don't have to ask why I'm that way. I don't really have to analyze it. That's a data point, and I know that. And there's so many other things on my list that are higher ratings. Let's go focus on those now, and let's let this one sit. You know, I don't need to go try that again to get the same result again, because I'm sure that I would get the same result again. So, but the process of actually thinking ahead of time, and maybe I was lying to myself a little bit that I was going to like it, but I realized I had to face up to the fact that I did this and I didn't like it, and I gave myself a 2. And if I write those things down and do that, then I've got that thing that's probably not going to change for me for the rest of my life. So that's the purpose of this, and that's we start to build these data points, and when we write them down like that, and we then later on we can look objectively and look at this kind of mosaic of different things we try, and as we'll get more into that, you'll see that even things you like that seem completely different, you'll start to see the connections between them. Like me with the photography, what I didn't like today, the reverse of that I do like is when I can really spend a lot of time with somebody and see what and really capture what is different about them. And what I liked about the part where I was talking to the family was understanding what was unique about them. And what I'm doing with you guys is helping you see what's unique about you. Those are all related to this kind of core thing that I now understand about myself. And that's where I want you guys to get to, is when that gets – you don't get it right away, or it's not all crystal clear and it gets more and more refined. But when you start to understand it, it's really powerful because you see new ways to sort of plug in that in everything you're doing at work and in other places too. So the risk is that if you don't go and do the experiment on something, like say I hadn't done the thing today, you might be throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because it wasn't like I didn't like everything I did today. There was one thing I did that was an 8 or a 9. And so when you try something, when you put off trying something because you, for whatever reason, you're resistant or you think it would be fun, but I don't know, you lose the chance to kind of whittle it down and find the parts of it that are good. That's why it's worth it, especially today. And so again, I had lunch and I did this, and it was all in an hour, for real. I'm not lying. I really did that. So anybody can do this on their lunch break. It just takes a little bit of thinking ahead of time. Does anybody have any questions? I'll stop right now. Are you kind of following that train of thought?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's talk about the 60-second version of this test. So if that sounds complicated or too hard or whatever, I'm just kind of going to go back to what we talked about with the Malcolm Gladwell book, Blink, and all that, our instinct is powerful, and it's very quick, and it's very it's good. It's the positive side of that is it's super accurate. It's as good as you're going to get of anything in the whole world about telling you what's right for you is that intuition. So if you try to overthink things, you're just going to get in the way of that process because you start to think a different way. And so actually, if you do this faster, it's almost better. So here's the 60-second version. So you don't have to do a big plan. You don't have to do anything. Say you had some opportunity come up and a friend said, hey, I'm going out to try playing cricket today. And you had cricket on your Sunday list. And you're like, oh, I've always wanted to do that. I'm going to go play cricket. So all you have to do, the 60-second version, is you just have to have the mindset of the experiment. So all you got to do, just jot down what you expect ahead of time. Or just even think about it if you can't jot it down. Leave yourself a voicemail or something. So that takes a couple seconds. And then you go do it. And then when you get done, you're just like, you kind of break it down. What parts did you like? You give it your rating. Give it a number on the happiness scale or the fun scale. And then you think, okay, based on what I did today, is there anything I want to continue or do more of? And that whole process, I mean, I'm sure 60 seconds is conservative. You can do that really quickly because it's really a mindset. But it is a process that doesn't work so well if you aren't conscious about it, because you'll lose it and you'll rationalize it, and your brain will turn it into something that you always knew or something that just happens. You tend to our views of history are really kind of shaped by what we know now. So is that clicking with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so the last topic for tonight we're going to talk about is the personal knowledge base. And last week we talked about a Sunday list. And a Sunday list, all it is a list of things that are interesting. to you. That's the only criteria. And if you can't think of anything, you know, I sent you some links. You can go look at places, dream jobs. You can look at, magazines or blogs. There's a lot of ways to add to that list. But you want to have a decent sized list so that you've always got stuff you can pick off and do. And a lot of times, like I talked about last week, the best chances come just kind of opportunistically. And so by writing them down, you're ready when that comes along just to take a lunch break to go somewhere new and do something different. And so why that's important is you want to try multiple paths, because the more different things you can do, the more sort of angles you can get at your calling. And you can think about it like it's almost like a shadow puppet on the wall. You know, we know it's our hand making that shape, but if you were to light your hand from a different direction, you'd get a different shape on the wall. And so when we're dealing with the right sides of our brain or our unconscious, you know, it's really accurate and it's really fast, but it's kind of indirect because we're looking at the shadows to try to figure out what's going on with the hands, sort of, if you follow that analogy. And so the more different angles we can look at the light, the better we can take a look at all what we have and then try to intuit back. We can look at that and analyze back, oh, here's some conclusions we can draw about what we like. You know, oh, I like doing photography where I really get to know somebody and I like to sit down and talk to somebody and get to know them. And there's a common thread, even though talking to people and doing photography don't necessarily have anything to do with each other. So you want to try lots of different things. And then as you start to make these connections, what we're going to talk about next week is how do you take, once we know a little bit about ourselves, and then how do you take one of those and then do more with it? How do you take it and turn it into something that will really start to get some momentum going on something that you might want to do down the road for a job, or that might be a really big part of your passion or something that you would focus on? And so I think that I guess the last thing I want to leave you with on this is that don't feel like that any of this that you have to, you know, that there is sort of one answer for your life, and that if you're not finding that one answer for your life, that somehow you're failing at it, because it really doesn't work that way. It's more like you're getting a better and better and clearer sense of who you are and what you need to be doing. And all these things that we're talking about speed up that process and make it more effective, so that you get really more, you get a lot more confident in choosing things, and you start to feel like you can choose things that you've never done before and be relatively confident that they're going to work out. You can take what now would feel like a bigger risk doesn't feel like as big a risk. You reduce your risk. So that's what we're trying to do. We're not looking for the one answer. We're looking to try to continually sort of close in on what it is for you that makes you unique. And then over time, you get deep. We're going to talk about how do you even go deeper with some of these topics to really refine what it is about you. So I'm going to stop. That's the main content. Let's talk about, let's see if there's any questions, and then I'll talk about what we're going to do next week. Did anything occur to anybody while we were talking about that? Did you realize anything about yourselves or something you've tried before?
This is Rachel. I just decided that I would start trying some small, fun things that might not relate to work at all, but just have been things like, oh, I've really, you know, considered doing that just because it seems like a fun thing to do, and try your acid test on it.
Yeah, great. That's great. How do you guys feel about the whole does it seem burdensome to have to write down or think ahead of time about what you're going to do? Or does that seem doable?
For me, for things that are a little scary, it gives me, you know, because I tend to be not intellectual, but I think a lot. It makes the scary things seem more like a curiosity than a scary thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, good. That's good, right? That should make you feel better?
Yeah, well, it just makes me kind of more, because I tend to be very curious and sort of like I think about a lot of stuff. So if I can like actually think about something first and then go and do it as an experiment, then it gives my brain something to do too. If that instead of just going, oh, I'm so afraid, you know, it's more like, huh, I wonder what this is, what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. So like today when I was going into the mall and I was feeling that way you're talking about, I was starting to get kind of scared about it. That was kind of what worked best for me. I was like, okay, it's just an experiment. Like, if nothing else happens, if it totally fails, that's okay. That's okay too.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked for me today. I tried what you just said. So,
cool.
How about Lauren and you guys who weren't on the call last week? Is there anything? Is this making sense even though you didn't hear what we did on the experiment, breaking things down to smaller sizes last week?
This is Elizabeth. Yeah, it's making sense. I think it might be just kind of a matter of, you know, getting used to doing it too, because it's kind of like a habit you need to get into.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Writing it down first.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and this is Lauren, and as a former psych major, what was really kind of interesting to me that I did not know that you mentioned is you really do need to write down, like, what you expect that you're going to like about something, because your brain will sort of massage it around and pick out other things that you liked about it. So it's like,
yeah,
your brain is sort of a grade grubber, you know?
Yeah,
whatever
exactly
works. Yeah, I'm latching,
yeah,
onto that. So
yeah,
for it to be an experiment that really teaches you something about yourself, you need to know where you started before you did it. Like, I think I will like this. And then you see if you do or not. And either way, like, even if your experiment is a mess, well, good. You don't like it. Cross it off. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, great. Great. That's,
I love
exactly
that. Your brain's a grade grubber. That's hilarious.
Right. Yeah, that's really good.
That's good.
That's good.
I really like the idea of being, of all of this, it's very intentional and sort of careful, because I think, you know, we just get into sort of habits of this is the way we do it because this is the way we know how to do, you know, fly off and try something new because it seems really interesting, and then get really frustrated when it doesn't work out the way we thought, you know?
Yeah.
I really like this idea of, like, it just slows the process down enough to let us reflect on it, you know? And that's kind of, it's counterintuitive, but hugely useful.
Hey, Alan?
Yeah.
This is Lauren again. I have a quick question. Were you wearing clothes today like you usually wear, or did you find yourself picking out something that was a little out of the ordinary for your experiment?
No, actually, I wore, like, really, like, I wanted to be as safe looking as I could.
Yeah.
I did think about it. And so I just wore, like, a golf shirt and shorts or something. I mean, I just wanted to look like every man or whatever. I didn't
Real
want
normal.
To, yeah, normal. Right. That's what I was going for. And I did think about it. And I didn't, like, approach any women, because that would have been another layer of defenses I might have had to work through. So,
right. I wondered about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I did think about those things. Well, great. I you guys got it. You definitely get it. That's great. So next week, what we're going to do is I want to talk about going pro with your passion, even when you can't quit your job. And that's about how do you take some of these things that are drawing your attention and they're getting some traction with you, and how do you turn them into something more meaty so you can try out a deeper sort of engagement with them. So, and then I guess I just want to leave you with, I actually had lunch with Melissa yesterday. It was a very nice time. And Melissa was reminding me that, sometimes when you get on a path like this and you really start paying attention, sometimes it feels like you're creeping along and that it's just taking you forever to do what you want to do. And gosh, I'm not figuring out what I want to do. But sometimes it's good to look back and see how far you've come. And you know, a year ago, I was still working at my company. I hadn't done my big trip to France that I did that really made a big impact on me. And now my book's about to come out, and I've done a whole lot of different things that I never would have dreamed about a year ago. And it just reminded me that, you know, most of what we're taught really plays against our human nature, whereas this way I'm teaching you guys really is trying to take advantage of what we're naturally good at anyway. And it's really kind of a nonlinear effect. And you put a little bit of effort into this and you get a much bigger return than you would get out. It's not like work where you put in some and you get a little bit more out. And so it doesn't all happen at once. And like Melissa, like you said, you don't want to get frustrated. You know, there's a tendency, definitely I'm this way, that I'll want to go, okay, that's going to be the thing I love, and I'll go do it. And it's not like everything I always dreamed about. And I tend to just shoot it down because I thought it was the silver bullet. But if you take it step by step like this, you'll be surprised at how far you'll come and how quickly you'll get a better understanding, and just your confidence will grow. And it can be fun while you do it. So I hope that y'all are getting a little sense of that as we get into this, and that you're starting to understand some new things about yourself, because that's what I really want for you. So let's see. I will send out a summary of our call, and I'll send a recording to you guys or a link to that. And then I hope you can all make it next week. And it'll be at the same time. I'm going to go put the new schedule up, but I'm just going to keep doing this on Wednesdays. I'm going to take a break the week after July 4th, but besides that, I'm going to do it sort of every week. And did you guys think of anything else that you think would add to the class, or something else I could do that would make it more understandable or more engaging? Just let me know, and we'll work that in. So thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.